Welcome to This Is Not About Your Body, a body neutrality podcast where we talk about all the real shit body image issues are actually about because they're never just about the way you look. I'm your host, Jesse Nealand, and today I have with me Sarah Petrosky, a sleep coach and sleep medicine postgrad from the University of Oxford, who helps tired but wired creative entrepreneurs optimize sleep. Sarah, who's also a longtime yoga instructor and personal trainer, is actually an old friend of mine from back in the day when we both worked as trainers at the private training gym, Peak Performance in New York City, and I've been trying to get her on here to talk about common sleep challenges, myths, and solutions for a very long time. So I'm super excited for this episode, and welcome, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you, Jesse. Yeah, we started chatting about this, I think, about a year ago, but now our schedule is finally aligned, and you're my first podcast.
No way, really?
Really?
Oh, that makes me so happy. I feel so special. Okay, so I want to have you start by talking about what it is you do. Like, what does a sleep coach do? And also, what got you interested in studying sleep in the first place?
Sure. I started to get interested in studying sleep over the very beginning of the pandemic. So everything shuts down March 2020. Mm-hmm. And I'm based in New York still. So the gym shut down, the yoga studio shut down, everything moves online. And I'm kind of, you know, a lot of my clients actually couldn't move online, my personal training clients, because got those busy lives, little kids at home. It's very hard to, now that I have a three-year-old, I'm very aware that to do a Zoom exercise class with a small child is not happening. So I was just kind of twiddling my thumbs and also noticing in different friends, anecdotally, sleep issues. They were either getting sleep during this pandemic for like the first time in a long time, or their sleep was totally thrown off and they were really struggling. And that had to do with, you know, a difference in the structure, a lack of structure, or a lack of commuting, a lack of crazy shift work, they're having more opportunity to sleep. So like, this is really interesting. And I've always been very interested in sleep. I've had very intense, like lucid dreams ever since I was a really little girl. I've kept a dream journal since I've been about 7 years old.
Oh man.
Yeah. And it just felt like this kind of quest, like the bottom of the ocean or space. It's like there's this part of our brain and our physiology where we're not fully conscious of it, but so much is going on. And I just felt like the subject matter was so deep and so interesting. And I had struggled with my own sleep a bit as well. Always taking a really long time to fall asleep. Going to sleep really late. And then as a personal trainer, having to, you know, it's kind of like a shift work job. You're working late nights, you get home, you eat late, and then you need to be up at like 4 or 5 a.m. for your morning clients. And my sleep was really pretty wrecked when I was a trainer, I would say. And then when I wasn't training, I was getting amazing sleep and amazing dreams, but also still struggling with getting to sleep because I didn't have the proper tools and habits. And I was having a really hard time winding down from the day. And so I just started really looking into it and being like, this ties everything together with the body, all of the stuff we've learned about the body, and with the years of yoga and meditation and working with the subconscious. And
so I was going to say, I feel like because you do yoga, meditation, Kundalini, like it's so much rest focused, right? Like there's so much restfulness, and obviously sleep and rest are different. Sleep and meditation are different, but it does sort of just seem like a natural progression in some ways of the stuff that you were already like interested in.
Exactly. I wanted to see another way of working with the subconscious and working with our embodied subconscious, something that we aren't even trying to do. Like when we dream, we're tapping into our subconscious, but we're not trying to manipulate it in any way. It's just happening.
That's dope.
And so what actually is going on there? So then I found this program that was actually offered online at University of Oxford. So I was able to take it from home, which was amazing. I was on campus for a week for a residency program and to be with all the professors and other students. It was awesome. But yeah, I found that and just really dove into all of the nooks and crannies and details of sleep science and really got interested.
So cool. Yeah. I also feel like this is such a perfect example of like if everyone was really left to their own devices and supported in doing stuff that was most interesting to them, like how diverse that is, that like it would never occur to me to find sleep this interesting. But as we've been talking about it, I'm like, it really is. This makes total sense that someone would be passionate about this. One thing I think is interesting is like in our world where pretty much anything and everything health and wellness related is like obsessively popular, I don't think until very recently we've seen almost anything about sleep beyond the idea that like, yeah, you should get 8 hours, despite it being arguably one of the more important aspects of health and wellness. So I'm curious why you think it's been overlooked for so long.
I don't know. I think it's just some sort of overarching macro culture shift of, you know, as much as people want to kind of like dump on the millennials and their self-care practices and how sometimes that can be like, I'm not going to show up for work today. Like the moon is in whatever. but there's something to be said, but I think kind of like a life balance and taking care of ourselves has started to be more like, yeah, this is how you sustain yourself. This is a longevity of a human and, how you show up better for other people too. And so it's starting to get, and obviously there's some certain educators who are really good at bringing this information to the public and podcasts. Like I think most people at this point have heard of like Dr. Matthew Walker. He does tons of podcasts. And whenever people find out I do sleep, they're like, oh, have you read this book? I read this book. And so it's been around for a long time, the field. However, as far as now the public starting to take an interest in it, I'm not sure. Maybe it was sort of that pause during the pandemic where we all were like, okay, let's reassess like our rest and recovery as well. So we're not just like spinning our, I feel like in a lot of places that kind of like I'll sleep when I'm dead mentality still persists, but in a lot of other places, people know this is part of taking care of yourself.
I feel like when I moved out of New York City, I basically slept like 12 hours a night for a year. Like, I mean, I was so deprived that it became such a thing because I definitely, and part of it obviously was the training schedule as well, like the mornings and evenings. Yeah. But a lot of it was the mentality, like I'll sleep when I'm dead. Like how little can I get away with? Also, I'm realizing that like sleep isn't sexy because you can't make people buy a whole lot of stuff. Like there are certainly things you can buy.
You can try.
But it's not like quite as capitalistically productive. Therefore, I'm sure part of the reason is just, you know, you can kind of take care of it yourself. So why talk about it? Why research it? Why, you know, that kind of thing too.
Yeah. I mean, it is a huge industry. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but it's just like you said, as you're starting to hear about it more, it's definitely, there's a lot more consumer dollars that go into it. And it's really interesting when I'm working with a sleep coaching client, they'll start to text me and send me pictures of like every sleep thing on the market that they come across because they're starting to think about it more. And I'll be like, here's a candle that promotes sleep. Here's these sheets that are wired with copper and they ground you to the earth. And then you sleep.
Oh my God, there's way more than I know about.
There's a lot out there. But yes, at the end of the day, there's, we can go into it, but you know, there's different sleep disorders that might be a thing that when you're working with a coach, you can kind of see a few red flags that you might need to be screened for and go to your doctor. But for the most part, it's just kind of really working on your relationship to sleep and winding down and kind of knowing the basics of what promotes a good sleep environment. A lot of it is pretty behavioral. You can buy some stuff if it's not harmful and it makes you feel good and whatever. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's kind of your own habits and relationship to this thing that can be kind of like daunting because you want to keep going. People want to keep going, keep going, keep going. And they don't like to sort of surrender into this place where it just takes over you, or they love it. Or they love the feeling whenever you're like, oh, here it comes. And I'm out.
I do love that.
It got me.
Okay. So speaking of the relationship, I want to acknowledge here, because you gave me, when we talked before, a word for this phenomenon for people who kind of go the other direction when it comes to sleep and become super fixated on it, particularly like tracking or managing or trying to optimize it. So, talk a little bit about what that word is and what that like phenomenon is.
Yeah. So similar to coming from the training world, when people start to, fixate on, say, their diet in a certain way, and maybe they don't have an eating disorder per se, but they, everything has to be healthy. Everything has to be perfect. Everything has to, you know, this is eaten with this to have the proper protein absorption of XYZ. And so it's this kind of obsession or fixation that, what is it even called? It's called
orthorexia.
Yeah. Orthorexia. And so in sleep, they've coined the term orthosomnia. So somnia just meaning sleep, ortho is to correct or fix. And so it becomes this obsession with correcting and fixing your sleep, getting the perfect sleep tracker score, having the perfect chamomile tea, like having a, and then really, really, it can be actually a bit detrimental to sleep, because sleep's kind of the one very interesting area where the more you try, the harder it's going to be.
And that's what I think is so interesting. I even had it down to ask, like, and how does that work? Because the whole thing is like, stress is going to have the opposite effect of good sleep. And if you're stressed about sleeping perfectly or putting all that pressure on, that's got to have a detrimental effect. So why? Why does this happen? Or like, I mean, I don't, you can't necessarily say why people become fixated on it in an unhealthy way, but like, what would you say to someone who feels this way or is like super preoccupied with tracking?
They may, I don't know why that may happen to people. I can take a guess that they're not sleeping well, or some sort of event has happened in their life that was like a stressful event that then impacted their sleep. And they didn't know how to fix it at the time. So it just kept perpetuating and just kept happening. And then they start reading and trying to fix it by all of the things they find on every blog or Instagram. And they want, they're going to do all of the things, all of the plant remedies, all of the, because they're trying to fix the thing. But then the issue is, they call it, it's called sleep effort in the field. And so the more effort you put into it, kind of the more importance and stress you're putting on that thing. And like acute bouts of insomnia, like a night here, a night there, certain nights where we don't sleep, that's normal. Like that's adaptive. That's, you know, left over from whenever there was, nighttime was a very scary time. There was predators, both human and animal. And if you sensed a predator and you were on your own and you didn't have like your tribe around, like you need to be alert to be able to then handle that stressor. So now our stressors might be like, I have a flight in the morning and I'm worried I'm not going to make it. Or a really big stressor, like a breakup or death, grief, a job loss, like something that actually, it makes sense that your body would be kind of stimulated and on alert. And then you have trouble sleeping that night just because you're in kind of like more of a stress state, because life and stress happens sometimes. And then what happens is, if you're not fixated on, eventually that stressor will go away, and also the way that sleep works, it's a two process model. One is your sleep pressure, and the other one is your circadian drive. And so when you've had a night of not so much sleep, you might feel kind of crap the next day. You might have more coffee, but as long as you don't have coffee too late in the day, that then the next night you can't sleep, then you're probably going to sleep better the next night because you've built up this sleep pressure.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
So sleep pressure here would be like hunger, sort of, if we were to compare this to food. Like, it's like the drive to eat. or like a deficit of the need being met?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It's, I mean, it's hormonally based. It's, you're maybe familiar with the hormone. It's called adenosine. Essentially it starts secreting about, like, as soon as we wake up, we start this hormone, adenosine starts building up in our body. And once it gets full, and when we sleep, it basically empties out the cup. When we go through a night of sleep, that clears out the adenosine, and then we're awake. And so it's this kind of hormone of like awake, asleep. It builds up the sleep pressure.
Yeah.
So if you haven't had enough of a sleep bout, a sleep period, a sleep opportunity to clear out all of that adenosine, there's going to be some left in your system. And then it'll compound. And so then you'll get a rebound effect of maybe like a good night's sleep. Now with the coffee, the way coffee acts is that caffeine actually blocks the adenosine for a bit. And then as soon as the coffee's out of your system, it comes rushing back. But that's why coffee's kind of a drug, right? And you have to be careful about the timing of it, because it can keep pushing your sleep later and later. I forget where I was going with that, but.
Well, I just want to say what's so interesting to me about this is how much it reminds me of like the intuitive eating thing, right? Like it's normal to sometimes overeat or undereat if you're in tune with your body. Sometimes that happens, but it just sort of regulates itself on the other side, right? Like if you accidentally undereat one day, the next day you're going to be extra hungry. You're going to eat more. It'll all balance out. It sounds like you're saying that the same thing is true with sleep, but just like with food, if a belief interrupts that, and then the stress comes with that, like you're very likely to create a negative cycle instead of just being like, well, that kind of sucked and I'm tired today, but I trust my body to sort it out tonight, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Jesse. And that's when it can become kind of a chronic issue and can lead to potentially insomnia, or maybe not full-blown insomnia, but like this obsession with getting good sleep and thinking you have to check all these boxes to make sure that you get a good night's sleep. And to be sure, there's certain biological things like that you want to mimic what your body wants to do during the daytime when you're awake, to be awake, and you want to mimic at nighttime. We want to do, you know, you don't want to be like running on a treadmill and drinking a coffee and have all the lights full blast on whenever it's time to start winding down for sleep. So there's certain things like, you know, you want a dark room, you want a cold room. Like we could go through the whole checklist, but at the end of the day, having to go through the whole checklist is in itself going to create more stress. Oh, and
super interesting. Yeah.
And so that's why you want to, most of the people that have been coming to me since I started doing the sleep coaching, they'll be like, oh, I haven't really slept through the night. I wake up 3 or 4 times a night for the past 2 years, ever since this person passed away, ever since I went through this breakup. They know what caused the issue.
Yeah.
But then the way that they adapt to that then creates this chronic thing. And so what, you know, your listeners, what people want to do is whenever there is this stressful event or something happens and a week goes by or 2 weeks go by and you're still, then that's a good time to maybe talk to somebody, talk to your therapist, talk to someone like myself and be like, okay, let's take a look at what's going on. And just rein in kind of the habits, rein in, look at, you know, start to track the sleep a little bit. You know, for insomnia, for a person who's like really tracking, I'd like to get rid of the wearables and the trackers. But if it's like brand new, then like, let's look at what's actually going on with your sleep and let's see how we can kind of arrange it in a way that's healthy and going to help you get back to normal, quote unquote, normal sleep.
Yeah. So give me a definition of the term sleep hygiene, because I feel like this is what we often see. And what you're describing right now is like how essentially sleep hygiene is really important in the early stages of a sleep interruption. And then later it's like those basic habits might not be enough if you've sort of let it go on and on. It's like becoming something else. So tell me about those early habits or what sleep hygiene means.
Sleep hygiene, you know, it's just like oral hygiene, right? Like you want to brush your teeth every night before bed. You want to, it's just kind of these basics. Our body, as we start to, at the end of the day, as the sun goes down, as we start to wind down for the day, when we go to sleep, our body temperature drops. So you want to mimic that. You want a colder room. It's harder to sleep in a warmer room. Mm-hmm. As the sun goes down, it's darker. You want to mimic that. You want a darker room, not a light room. But these are really, you know, it's almost like intuitive, you know, you know these things. But sleep hygiene is just that. It's temperature, it's light, it's doing things that you find relaxing. And I think some of the, all of the stuff that's out there can be a bit too general. And so it's like, what's relaxing for you?
Right.
You know, cause a lot of it is just like, don't be like, look at screens for 3 hours before you go to sleep. Well, if I don't look, sorry, but I mean, I'm getting my daughter to bed and everything, but I find scrolling relaxing. I can fall asleep scrolling. And if I, you know, if you're just telling people to just sit there in a dark room with their thoughts for 3 hours, like they're just going to start to get like worked up and think of all the things they have to do the next day. That might work for some people.
Yeah.
Some people might really need a long window to totally chill out and do nothing, but it's like, what's relaxing to you? One of the things that people, one of the recommendations is to have like a, you know, to journal at the end of the day, to write down all your worries, just basically to transition you from the time of doing to the time of just being, you know? And that's why a lot of my initial recommendations for my clients have to do more with, much more to do with things we do during the day and not focus so much on what they're doing at night. So, for instance, I love meditation. I find it really helpful, even if it's only 5 minutes, because that's what happens is most people, if they don't have a meditation practice or a journaling practice or something where they're taking a moment to be with their own thoughts, when is the time when they're with their own thoughts? Is when they lay down in bed and then their eyes are closed and they're just with themselves. And then all the stuff starts coming in and they're like, oh, that thing I have to do tomorrow, or that thing I saw in the news, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So taking like a set period of time during the day that's not right before bed to do that, whether it's meditation or journaling or, you know, a walk. And then I like to also make sure we incorporate the other things that make you sleepy at night, like exercise, sunlight, just the basics of like the things to do during the day so that you're sleepy at night. Because I find that when you try to put it all at the night, that's putting a lot of pressure on the night. So that's my take towards sleep hygiene.
Makes so much sense to think about it that way. And I think you're right. Like, it reminds me of when self-care kind of became a buzzword and everyone was like, I mean, I try to like take bubble baths or whatever and read a book, but like, I don't feel any more cared for. And those are just sort of random examples being thrown at the wall because we can come up with them. But what makes any individual feel cared for is going to be so specific to what their needs are and what their life looks like. I know the first couple of massages I got, I don't know that I've ever been more stressed out in my life. Like, that was not relaxing. I was laying
Am I
there
relaxing,
being...
right? Am I relaxing?
Yeah, literally. Right? I was like, is this relaxing? Like, I bet they're bored. No, don't think about that. That's not relaxing. Like,
do I need to talk to them? Ask them how they was.
Exactly. Like, and I, you know, I mean, I've kind of found ways to be more restful in some meditation too. Like, the first, I did like a month of daily meditation and it jacked me up so much. I would just sit down and felt like I was going to battle with myself. If I tried to do that before bed, like that would have not been effective relaxation at all.
Exactly. But it is good practice for sitting with your thoughts. But that's why I would definitely move it to away from bedtime. Yeah.
And that speaks to, I think, something that you pointed out when we talked about this before, which is so brilliant and important. The idea that as this stuff gets more mainstream, the topic of sleep seems to be just as riddled with misinformation, and it's just as confusing and overwhelming as the topics of fitness and nutrition, I think, used to be and still sometimes definitely is.
Yeah.
So people who are seeking solutions, they end up feeling like overwhelmed, confused, disempowered, following bad advice, and then feeling hopeless, blaming themselves because they're like, obviously I'm doing it wrong. And I would love to hear some examples if you have any of like common myths or bad advice that people might hear about sleep. You just gave the one, I think, just so obvious when you think about it, but like what relaxes you is going to be different for each person. So trying to follow like, oh, I'm supposed to be off screens, meditate and journal. If that doesn't relax you, that's not good advice for you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a yoga teacher and I've had a every single day meditation practice for, I want to say almost 20 years now. Damn. And that is not how I spend my evening. I am on Instagram. I'm like watching my shows. Right. I'm like running around the house, trying to get my kid to bed. You know, it's, well, I'll just, our mutual friend, Craig, this is actually a really good one. If you're a person that does fall asleep to this, he likes to watch like ESPN Classic baseball games because they're games that like he's watched before. So on one hand, I feel like the screens are okay. On the other hand, don't watch like what's the popular thing on Netflix right now, like Baby like Reindeer,
True Crime or something.
True Crime, like, like don't watch the Dahmer, whatever. Like, you know, don't be watching these highly stimulating, like kind of like feel good, something you've watched before or something you know doesn't trigger you. Like for me, it's like celebrity garbage, but like some other people find that like. They get mad about it or whatever. That's what my mom girlfriend told me. I was like, I like to scroll and look at celebrity drama. And she's like, well, that makes me mad. And I'm like, well, I just don't care. And I think it's funny.
It's relaxing. Yeah, like, yeah, whatever.
So it's kind of finding your own zone for that and talking to somebody about it because there's certain things that even if they are, maybe you want to watch, maybe you want to play video games, but video games can also like just be firing your dopamine so much that that's going to be hard to come down from as well. So it is kind of a balance there. On one hand, it's personalized. Yeah. On the other hand, some of the things that you might find relaxing might make it a little harder to go to sleep.
That's something too, if we think about like, the comparison here with nutrition and fitness and that kind of thing, like I followed the good health advice for years to eat brown rice instead of white rice, and it turns out that causes a horrible reaction, and I thought I had IBS, and it turns out I just can't eat brown rice. And like that's such a perfect example of it might be generally good advice, but it wasn't good advice for me. And the important thing here is that you're running everything through that self like connection to self-trust filter to be like, well, how did that work? Like maybe screens are good or bad or whatever. Like you can certainly play with it, maybe different video games. But if you're not running it through that filter to be like, how did that impact me specifically? Then you're going to follow bad advice. Yeah. Even when it's well-intentioned and works for a lot of other people.
Absolutely. And I think I was actually thinking this about you. This is kind of a personal note. I was thinking this about you on my like morning run. And I was just like, Jessie, it's so cool. She's had like so many different careers and like ideologies about things. But what's really cool is, you know, the term transcend and include. You know, you familiar with that term?
No.
So it's kind of like you learn something and it feels like the skies have opened at the time that you learn it. And you start incorporating this new methodology or this new thing you learned that's really helped you. Like, let's take, for example, fitness stuff, right? Like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden I'm lifting heavy weights and I feel really confident and I'm sleeping better. Like there's all these reasons why biologically lifting weights and exercising can make you feel better. But then what comes with it sometimes, for not everybody, but for some people, is the obsession and the diet culture and different types of, you know, and so you take and then you moved on to this beautiful new career of like body neutrality and inclusivity because you saw that part of fitness.
Right.
But it doesn't mean like fitness. It doesn't mean you're never going to move again. It doesn't mean you're not going to eat healthy food again. It means you've run it through your own filter of like, and so transcend and include is like, I'm taking with me all of the great stuff and all of the great stuff from that system that I've learned that's out there. But there was parts of it that did brown rice didn't make me feel good. You know, getting my body fat checked did not work for me. That right. was not cool. And so what are other practices that make sense for me? And what are yeah. things from other lineages or new methodologies that you're learning? And so you're including the things that worked and just running it through your own filter. Cause even the stuff that I say right now, you know, 10 years from now might be different. It's not like there's this one authoritative sleep science thing or right. exercise science thing. Right. Like, it's awesome that we can build on things, but yep. but run things through our lens and then run our very own experiments with it. Like, did that work? Did that not work?
Yeah.
Okay, let me try it again. Yep, nope, not doing that. Or
I
you
love
know.
That phrase, because so much of the work that I do now is pointing people back toward themselves, like building that sense of connection to yourself, trust in yourself. And it's so empowering when you have that, because you can read like an amazing book and be like, yes, yes, no, yes, gonna forget that completely. And this is sticking with me for the rest of my life. Like, when you have that, you can take and grow and learn from so many different resources and tools and interesting things, but not let it overwhelm you, not let it be moralized. Like, there's a right and a wrong way yeah. to do it. I'm relaxing yeah. wrong. I'm sleeping wrong.
Yes.
And that is really the antidote to this overwhelm and confusion, especially in a topic like this, where people are usually, they don't generally, I don't think, are Googling like how to sleep better if they're sleeping fine, right? Like, they're usually coming to right. solve a problem.
Right.
And then if you're picking up solutions and going, well, they're the expert, I have to follow their advice, and not running it through that filter, not checking in as an experiment that's like an individual and unique experience, mm-hmm. you're screwed.
Mm-hmm. And
it's
then, sorry, that felt like a good place to pause, and I just yeah. put in there. But your question, like, what other things are people doing mm-hmm. that may not be helpful? That made me think of there are certain things, right? Like, you could try it, but like, one of the popular things that people always do is like melatonin,
right?
Like, there's the gut. I mean, in America, this is one of the only places that it's not regulated. In many other countries, it's a controlled substance that you have to have a prescription for.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
And here, they're sold,
I hate melatonin.
Like,
personally, yeah. talk about that filter. Did not work for me. Made me feel awful, but yeah. I respect it for people.
Yeah, because the dosing of it that they sell at the pharmacy is like not the proper amount. It's actually like a tiny amount that's actually the most effective. Right. So you have to like, anyway, that's a whole other thing, but it only really is great for like, kind of playing around with your circadian rhythm. So for jet lag or for shift right. work, and it has a very slight hypnotic effect. So it might make you feel a little sleepy, and help you kind of get to sleep, but it's not going to help keep you asleep. And if you take it at the wrong time, it's still right. going to be in your system the next day, and you're going to feel groggy, and you're going to get that brain fog.
Yeah.
And so that's one that I see all the time. And, you know, and people will, another thing I see is when people will, companies will pair it with kind of natural sounding things. So like, this is melatonin with valerian. This is melatonin yeah, yeah. with lavender. And it's like, well, that sounds healthy for me.
Yeah.
And so people take it, and then they're like, oh, I feel terrible. And then they're drinking coffee to try to get rid of the melatonin yeah. hangover. And then they can't sleep well again the next night. Yep. And then it kind of perpetuates this cycle where then you're in a tricky spot. So
that just makes me think of like every wellness catastrophe, or what am I trying to say? Every wellness, like, there's just like a setting off, a cascade is the word I wanted, not catastrophe. Like, it just makes me think of in high school when I was like, okay, so I have acne, I'm going to use this acne face wash, but that dries me out. So now I have to use this lotion, but the lotion actually brings like a rash to the surface. So now I have to use cortisone, which actually, you know, it's like all of those things started because I was trying to solve a problem that created so many more problems. I feel like the same thing is true in so much of pharmacology and so much mm-hmm. of like just health and wellness stuff in general.
Yeah.
But I feel like that kind of brings us back to the idea that you were saying before of like, if we were able to view the occasional bout of like not sleeping well or whatever as kind of neutral, like, yeah, that's just something that happens sometimes instead of a problem that needs to be solved. Mm-hmm. We might save ourselves a lot of chaos in the aftermath, right?
Yeah. Knowing it's normal. Sometimes yeah. I'll have a session with someone and just me telling them that it's kind of normal to wake up in the middle of the night. Like, by the way, we all wake up in the middle of the night. Whether you remember it or not is a different story. But
interesting.
Like, everyone wakes up. We go through our sleep cycles, and that's part of the sleep cycle. It's like light sleep,
right.
deep sleep, REM sleep, wake up. Light
huh.
sleep, deep sleep, REM sleep, wake up. But some people, once they wake up, they're so like, oh, I'm awake, I have to get back to
yeah,
sleep.
So.
And then they start like ramping up their stress response. And then
wow.
That's what we have to work with to get them to calm down and go back to sleep. But sometimes just telling them, you know, people wake up, you're meant
yeah.
to wake up. And everybody wakes up. Like, I figure what the time is. If it's like 3 to 5 minutes, if you're only awake for like 3 to 5 minutes, a lot of people tend to not remember that they woke up.
Sure.
But we all kind of wake up. If you don't, there's like probably an issue, a problem going on.
So interesting. So just by literally telling people like this is normal, you give them the permission they need to not approach that like an emergency, which
yeah.
might just solve that ramping up and let them go back to sleep.
Yeah.
This
I think
feels
we're all just like looking to be told we're normal.
Yes. I know, that's so like such an interesting example of that too. Cause obviously so much of what I do in the body space, like body neutrality, it just feels like we're talking about sleep neutrality and how it would have the exact same like calming, normalizing, validating effect if you were just like, yeah, it's normal for sleep to kind of vary and not view that as a problem. You're just so much better off in the long term.
I want to just make sure I make a note to say, however, sleep disorders is a very real thing,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so you definitely want to, you know, when I'm talking to somebody, I'll notice, and there's things that present differently where you're like, okay, this is something we're going to look at. Like, you know, if I'm talking to somebody and I'm like, let's get a sleep apnea test. Let's,
got it. Yeah.
Okay, have you done blood work for restless legs? Have, you know, there's specific things that might need different medical attention, and
yeah.
to make sure you're not taking that lightly. Cause sometimes when you are waking up a lot in the middle of the night, that could be sleep apnea. It could be that you're choking,
right,
you
right.
know, and actually in women, it's super not diagnosed enough.
Huh.
Yeah, that's an interesting new kind of research that people have been looking at. It's actually, because, you know, I feel like just like sleep seems to be a new thing we're talking about a lot, I feel like menopause seems to be like a new thing.
Totally. I feel like in the
I'm
last
like,
year, I've just been reading about it constantly and getting very stressed out about it.
Oh, well, yeah. So, menopause neutrality.
I am
Let's
definitely
going
to have to work
stressed.
On that at some point.
But, you know, women do, that is a phase of life that some women do struggle with their sleep because of a couple of different reasons, but one of them is the hot flashes, right?
Right.
So
Sure.
Temperature and sleep, like I was talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone's having a big hot flash and they're sweating, that's going to wake them up. Now, how fast you go back to sleep or not
right.
is kind of what you really want to work at, because hormone replacement therapy is a whole other conversation. But
right.
If you can be like, oh, I'm hot, I woke up, and find ways to cool your room down, there maybe won't be there so much stress as you go through that
right,
transition without waking you up. But another thing that happens
yeah.
is women's prevalence of sleep apnea goes way up. It's like, I think it's more than double. I think it like triples
oh,
or something. Not entirely sure why. I was just at this training I was just at last weekend. One of the women there does some research into women's health, and she was telling me that there's actually a protective mechanism of progesterone on our respiratory health.
Oh, wow.
And so as we lose those hormones, our likelihood of having more apneas increases. And there was actually, I guess, some study where they looked at women that were premenopausal, before menopause, and they were looking at their respiration. And when they were in the luteal phase, so the phase right before you actually menstruate, that's when they had the least episodes of apnea. And so when you're in your luteal phase is when you have your highest progesterone. And so something about the progesterone, they think, has a protection effect on your respiratory system.
Wow, that's so fascinating. Yeah. And of course, I'm sure that's only recently anyone bothered to try to research that.
Yeah. But I feel really like sleep apnea is massive. And I feel like, you know, I think talking about the future of different things, I think, you know, now I'm 46 now. So, well, almost, I just aged myself by 2 months, so almost 46. But, you know, I just have my first mammogram. You're supposed to start getting them at age 40, but it's recommended. Mm-hmm. Like at age 40, you get screened for a mammogram every year. And I feel like in the future, I think, you know, it'd be great to be like, okay, you're age 50 now or whatever, let's get you screened for sleep apnea every year.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's super interesting. And will you give me, I don't know much about sleep apnea. It's where you stop breathing, right? Will you give a little definition for anyone who's listening and like, what the hell is sleep apnea?
Yeah, you actually, that's it. It's
that's
when
it?
When you stop breathing, when you're sleeping. I mean, what happens is essentially your muscles relax when you're asleep, gravity. So the throat actually collapses in on itself. When you're awake, it's kind of like splinted. Like the pressure of breathing and the pressure of standing upright keeps your airway more open. And then when you lay down to sleep at night, these muscles get a little jello-y and gravity. And so the throat actually starts to collapse in on itself.
Oh, wow.
And so it can be harder to breathe. And it's
fascinating.
More prevalent in men, more prevalent, the heavier you are, the bigger your neck circumference is. Hmm. The effects of it are, you know, quite detrimental. You know, it's very, very hard on your heart. It increases your risk of all kinds of diabetes, hypertension, heart attack. Mm. Like it's a huge thing. And so there's different treatments for it, you know, CPAP being the one that's prescribed the most, but the people adhere to the least. So nobody wants to wear the mask. But there's all kinds of other things, you know, you sleep on your side or you wear like a dental thing that can open up your airway a little bit.
Interesting.
But that's what it is. And so snoring, even though it's kind of normalized, any even little bit of snoring, especially in women, should just maybe like take a look at.
Oh, wow.
Just get a screen. You can do it at home. You don't even have to go into a sleep lab anymore. They can just send you a little kit. You just talk to your primary care provider. They send you a little, it can just like go on your finger and it measures your oxygen saturation. And then
good
you
to know. Now I want to do it just because I'm curious.
I know, just because, right?
Okay, so something that I wanted to talk about is the sort of self-fulfilling prophecy of insomnia. Like we've been sort of touching on here that it is normal to occasionally not sleep well or not as deeply or to wake up or whatever. Maybe the first night or two, you're just kind of annoyed or confused, and then it starts to gather momentum because you're stressed and anxious and start to become a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy thing. You use the term habituating pattern, and I wanted to have you talk a little bit about that phenomenon around insomnia.
Well, it does. It becomes a habit, right? You're starting to train yourself not to sleep. So
it's like you get more, is it more about the fact that you become more stressed about sleep, so then that stress keeps you awake? Or is it something more like subconscious around, I'm a person who doesn't sleep, and somehow that belief, you know, I'm curious, like what we're really talking about when we look at like long-term insomnia, where it's just become like, it's me versus sleep now.
There's a couple different things. I think both of the things you said, it can become an identity for some people. They can be like, well, I don't sleep. And, you know, like you said, that can be even a cultural thing of like wearing like a badge of honor sort of thing. Or people can get really self-identified of that. Sorry, does the audio still sound okay?
Yeah, it sounds good.
There's like a lot of weird stuff going on here. I'm not sure what's going on. You start to just, your brain loves habit. Your brain loves a pattern. So what starts to happen, there's something in sleep coaching where the term is called stimulus control. And so people, when they're having trouble with sleep and they're making all this sleep effort that we talked about and trying to do the things to sleep at night, like you know, they bring the chamomile tea into the bedroom and I'm not sleeping, so I'm going to read in bed, or I'm going to like have a high protein snack so that I'm full at night. Yeah. So I'll have my nightstand will be full of protein bars. And now you're associating your bedroom, your brain starts to associate your bedroom with all these other things. It's not like I'm in the bed, I'm going to go to sleep. I'm in the bed, I'm going to go to sleep. It's I'm in the bed, I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to wake up and have a snack. I'm in the bed, I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to wake up and read. I'm in the bed, I'm having trouble falling asleep. I'm going to get on my phone. So your brain after, I can't say that there's like an actual time period. It's not like three nights and then you have a problem. It's like, but the longer that goes on where you're in the bed doing things other than sleeping. Your brain starts to correlate going to bed with doing things other than sleeping. Mm-hmm. Right. It's not necessarily a causation thing, although I guess it could start to be, but the brain just like associates the time to sleep with the time to do other things. Yeah. And so that's when you want to interrupt that.
Right. So this is like something I always it's one of the things that strikes me as sort of magical about the human brain and the way it loves patterns and stuff is like how you can impact your mood through these associations. For me, trying to work out at home, I can do it, but I never get that feeling of being in the mood to do it the way I used to when I walked into a gym. Even now, like I can walk into a gym, I put my sneakers on, I'm in a gym, I'm in the mood to work out. It's just like, boom, boom, boom. This is a series. And at home, I'm like, I could do anything. And one of them is workout and I'm going to choose that. But there's never that mood for it. And I always just feel like we often don't take advantage of the ways that we can influence the thing we're in the mood to do. What feels like just a, you know, like, yeah, that's what 100%. I do here.
That's why as a trainer, I'm going to say I never, because that wouldn't make sense. For a period of time, I would go do sessions at people's homes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's where people want to be. And you're like this traveling trainer in New York. Yeah. You're like, I'll take the subway here. I'll take this here, which is exhausting. But then you don't have to pay the overhead of the rent at the gym. And you're like, great. Okay. You know, fine. But then I would come to find people are just like, you know, they're feeding their dog. They're getting the mail. They're on their phone. You ask them to put their phone down, but they don't have the association, even if they have a beautifully constructed, you know, New York wealthy gym in there. Yep. They don't have that association. So I started to draw a hard line after I think it was my first 2 years as a trainer of like, I don't do in homes. You're coming to the gym. Like, and people would fight me on it. And I'd be like, come. And if you hate it, we'll figure something else out. Yeah. But I need you to come in for at least your like intake session. So it was hard with older clients whose houses I had been going to, because there is that thing of once you step into the gym, that's all we're here to do.
Yeah. Like this is where I work hard. And now I'm in the mood to work hard. At home, I'm never in the mood to work hard.
And so we want to create that same, so we want to create that same environment in the bedroom.
Yeah.
And with bedtime. And if you're doing anything else, if you want to also like doing these other things that I said are relaxing, like reading or watching TV or whatever, just don't do them in the bedroom. So you're not creating that association. Like you still do them, but like that's a living room thing.
Yeah.
That's a, like making our way towards the bed thing, but we don't want to do all those things in the bedroom because then we start to create that association. So
totally,
just like the gym equals workout or like the yoga class equals I'm going to go stretch, I'm not going to talk, I'm going to turn my phone off. Like we know as soon as you walk in, that's what you're doing. It's really great for people as soon as they walk in the bedroom, they know this is what I'm here to do.
Yes.
I got a job to do. It's sleep. Bye.
It feels like one of those things where like you can do pretty much anything without this, but it's just going to be harder. It's such an easy way of supporting every aspect of life that you want to go well to have these associations in place, these habits or rituals or whatever.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work for you, like whatever, you can still choose. You can still make choices. It kind of streamlines it all.
Yeah.
And
I feel like that's my work as a performance sleep coach is, you know, doing all these daytime things so that then there's, I think I've said it before, but there's not doing at night and right. making, and if that's not working, if that's not working, where we need to refer you to, like what else is going right, on? Right. Cause there are other things that go on and they can be fixed really. Yeah. So, and there's people to do that. There's not many people to do that. That's kind of one of the issues. There's been a ton of sleep medicine doctors, but they do exist. And, you know, if people contact me or, you know, I have a list of providers and you can, for everybody's state, there's different doctors, different behavioral sleep, psychologists, different things that can kind of really tackle anything that is outside of the realms.
Totally. Yeah. So, okay. The last thing I kind of wanted to touch on here is the moralization of sleep habits. And I feel like we've already sort of been circling it, but very similar to nutrition and exercise. I think there's a lot of like sleep experts out there, health and wellness coach type people who are sharing unrealistic or unsustainable advice, often the kind that relies on like seemingly discipline or willpower or self-control or whatever. It's often like biohacking gym bros who are obsessed with optimizing everything and tell you to like take your ice bath and then, you know, whatever the thing is, and then no tech before bed for 3 hours. Like it feels like it's sending this message of there's a right and a wrong way to do it, and that the best way to do it is like pretty extreme. And everything we've talked about so far is maybe not being extreme about any of it is the most sustainable and best choice for most people most of the time. So I'm just curious to hear your thoughts. Like, how do you help people walk the balance knowing that that's out there, knowing that some of that's probably even good advice sometimes? Like, how do you
100%.
Help them not be stressed and feel pressured at the same time that they take some of the advice when it, you know what I mean? Like, how do you help people as a sleep coach navigate that?
That's a good question, actually. I mean, I guess if all that stuff's working for them, I don't see them.
Right, that's fair.
Just scaling it. I'd say if that is stressing a person out, or if it's like that you're talking to someone and they're like, I didn't do it right, or I have to do all these things, just scaling it back. You know, it just shouldn't be such an effort.
Yeah.
If you're enjoying yourself, I mean, look, it's like a,
it's
your life. If that's how you want to spend your time, like, you know, have at it if you're finding it fun. But if it's becoming problematic and it's another box to check and you don't have enough hours in the day and you're, you know, not getting your work done or not spending time with your kids or your family because you have to do your 10 step wind down routine, like,
yeah,
maybe that
totally.
Could be a little reevaluation.
I also wanted to share, so much of what we've been talking about here, like taking the pressure off and normalizing, giving permission, having more of that kind of neutral approach when it's not a sleep disorder or it's not outside of this realm or whatever, which I think is probably what most people are looking at when they're stressed about sleep occasionally. It reminds me, in part because of the need to be in a relaxed state, it reminds me of like sexual dysfunction, where like a guy who occasionally can't get or keep an erection, if he's like, yeah, that's normal, sometimes it happens, doesn't stress about it, it'll probably come back and not be a big deal. But if he's like, this is a really big deal, oh my God, I have to perform next time, I have to prove my worth, and now we're really looking at setting up like long-term erectile dysfunction, right? And the key to breaking those in my work with people with sexual dysfunction, a lot of times when it comes from that performance anxiety, is, you know, taking the pressure off, like finding ways to play and enjoy pleasure or connection or whatever without the pressure to orgasm or get an erection. The challenge, I think, is with sleep. Like, if you don't get an erection or an orgasm during a sexual experience, it can still be dope as hell. If you don't sleep, like, how do you convince yourself that's not a complete catastrophe? How do you allow yourself to create that safe space when you're like, I will literally be a wreck tomorrow if I don't, like, how do you take the pressure off to perform when the performance is so crucial to your day-to-day life, you know?
Well, a couple of things, but the one would, my question would be like, have you ever had a night where you didn't sleep before?
So just pointing them back to their resilience, like,
well, no, like seriously, like
sure,
let's say you had a night, okay, and then, you know, what happened? Like, what do you think would happen when you were laying in bed? What did you think was going to happen? And then what actually happened?
So nothing bad's ever happened. I mean, I can say that. I don't know what I would have thought in those moments, but certainly it would have been a bigger deal than what actually happened, which is that I was tired and in a bad mood.
Like, exactly. Like, what happens is when we're laying in bed and we're trying to solve the problem with our mind, but our mind is actually kind of offline a little bit because we might be a little bit in between sleep and wake. And there actually is like brain functions of like our prefrontal cortex goes more offline. And so the rational part of our brain, when we're in this kind of sleep wake area is kind of offline. So we're starting to have irrational thoughts while we're laying there. So if you could talk to somebody and just kind of bring the rationale back and be like, this isn't the time to be solving these things, or just kind of like reduce the intensity of these kind of catastrophic thoughts of, well, have you ever had a night of no sleep before? Like, what happened? Like, and the one thing to bear in mind is, you know, safety concerns. Obviously, like if we're talking to like a pilot or a commercial truck driver or a mom that has to take her kids to school and then drive an hour to like, you know, remote work or commute, like, that's a different story. Like, maybe you need to take a strategic nap later in the day when you're tired, or maybe you do need to have some stimulants. Safety is a concern, but for the most part, maybe like you're just like a cranky ass person to be around that day, and you just didn't want to talk to anybody. And maybe you can find some comfort in that. Maybe you can be like, don't talk to me. Like, maybe the next day is like, you are going to journal more, or just kind of like lean into really the mundane crap that doesn't take a lot of brain work, like cleaning your house, or, you know, we don't always have that luxury because not everybody's self-employed like us, but like, you know, you might have to go to a really big meeting or something. But you know, just it's not the end of the world. You've had a bad night of bad sleep before and you've done okay. You know, it wasn't your best day, but
it also
over time, you know, it's an issue, and then we got to fix the issue. But it's really kind of restructuring those really like high intensity thoughts around, oh, I'm gonna have a terrible day tomorrow. It's like, how can you lean into, like you said, you know, how can you make not sleeping enjoyable? I think on one hand, it can be like, well, this is just my alone time, and like always getting up out of bed. Be like, get up out of bed, but don't make it, there's a saying, don't make insomnia functional. Don't give it a function. Like, when you get up out of bed, you don't want to like go do work. You don't want to go like start making some creative, like, or you can do like a creative project, but it's like, I need to get this creative project done. You don't want to associate it with a task to do, but it could be, hey, I'm awake in the middle of the night and nobody else is, and I'm just gonna like relax and watch a show, I don't know, like, and then the next day you could just kind of like have like a pretty, do as little as possible.
Yeah,
do
low power
just exact
mode.
Just exactly what has to be done kind of day. And then the other thing, I'm like, for me, I'm like, if I can get somebody to actually, this is a whole different subject, but if I can get somebody to actually really fall in love with sleeping and their dreams, because sometimes people feel like they don't get good sleep if they have really active dreams or troubling dreams. But for me, there's so much information in dreams, and I love to dream, and that's why I got into this in the first place. So it'd be like, what movie is my brain gonna play tonight? Like getting really curious about your sleep and getting really curious about what's going on with your subconscious, and then kind of leaning into that a bit.
So what I was gonna say before, and it applies to this part as well, is like, I don't even struggle with sleep, and I immediately feel calmer just thinking these thoughts. Like, that it would just be a time to be with yourself, and that we can trust ourselves to be tired and in a bad mood, like that we are resilient, and that we're not really being rational in those moments. It's not the moment to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, when we're tired, we will deal with being tired. And there's just so much like self-compassion and self-trust in that. And I love that. It's like immediately such a soothing thought. So thank you for sharing all that. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So I know that you are doing a program that's coming up. So do you want to talk a little bit about what that is for anybody who's listening and curious what, how to work with you maybe?
Yeah. Well, there's different ways to work with me. First of all, anyone can find me. I'm probably the most accessible on my Instagram of any other place. Cause I just, you know, my ADHD, I just love the like scroll and the like, if I get a DM in there, it's pretty fast. So it's Sleep Fit Sarah on Instagram, and anybody can connect with me and talk about what it looks like to work together. That's also my website as well, sleepfitsarah.com. The program that's coming up is actually not sleep specific. However, you could consider it sleep specific because, as I was mentioning, I really like to focus on more of the daytime. And so it's a program that I've been doing. It's going on, I guess we've been doing this for 9 years now. Another Kundalini teacher and I have partnered up, her name's Zita, and we do a 28-day, it's a cleanse, but I don't like that word. But it's 28 days. We'll just lean into the yoga part. For 28 days, there we do 30-minute Kundalini yoga Zoom sessions together in a container every single morning. Mm. And sometimes that's one of the things that can really help people. If they're trying to like get up at the same time every day, so they can kind of create the same circadian rhythm and the same sleep pressure every day, is to get up at the same time every day and like not sleep in on the weekends, get up at the same time every day. And one of the things that can help people to do that is like group accountability, having something, having a person waiting for you or having an activity scheduled. And so it's 7:30 a.m. every day for 28 days. We all get online and we do 30 minutes of like Kundalini yoga and a meditation. And so if you're new to meditation, this is a great one because the meditations might be only anywhere from like 5 to 10 minutes. And it's a nice way to start the day, to have that time with yourself, but, and also you've been to a few of my Kundalini classes. Yeah. Kundalini meditations are very different because they're pretty active actually. So you might be concentrating on a mantra. You might be concentrating on a particular way to breathe, breath work. There might be singing, visualizations. And so it gives you practice in kind of disassociating from your thoughts, not disassociating, but maybe disentangling is a better word, kind of disentangling with your thoughts. And so if that's something that's interesting to people, we do that every day for 28 days. And then the cleanse portion, I have so many people that don't even do that part. They just come for the yoga, but I personally love it because it's another way of looking at habits. Mm-hmm. I can just get into the habit of kind of like eating the same thing over and over and over again. Sure. And I love it because for me, it's a practice in mindful eating. And it's kind of like sensual and fun for me because I'll go to the farmer's market and be like, what am I intuitively drawn to right now? Like, some years I only want to eat like the color red and I don't know what that's about, but I'm like, I want red peppers and my apples. And so for me, it's kind of, disrupting. It's a pattern disruptor, but by bringing in more nutrients, by bringing in different combinations of food. And we give people like a PDF and a recipe book and things like that, but there's nothing about it that's really like hard and fast. I take it as an opportunity to not just to kind of reset my nervous system. And so I won't do coffee for that month. I won't do sugar for that month. I won't do alcohol for that month, but people can do it however they'd like and just make it more about being mindful and, you know, eating more veggies and more fruits and having yoga every single day and having a container of people that are doing it with you. People
so
like don't
to anybody
stop.
Listening, like, take care of yourselves first. Obviously, if you have stuff around food and that part
exactly,
is not going to call
exactly,
you.
Exactly.
The rest of it just sounds to me like kind of a self-care routine building jumpstart. And it sounds really lovely. I've taken Sarah's classes, the Kundalini classes, and they're amazing. I don't do any yoga, so I can't compare to a whole lot here, but I really enjoy it. So yeah, thank you for sharing so much wisdom about sleep. And yeah, it just aligns so beautifully. Now I want to do like a collab on sleep neutrality because I just feel like it's such a powerful concept, and it aligns so perfectly with all the stuff I do. And like, I've never heard anybody really talk about it that way. It's
Never
amazing.
really thought about it that
Well, good job.
Yeah.
We will link to your website and Instagram in the show notes. So anybody who's interested in reaching out to Sarah, working with Sarah, please do. Will you just say when that program starts?
Yeah, that is going to start on May 27th. So I think this will come out before the
Yeah.
start. So it's actually Memorial Day. So
Okay.
by starting May 27th, it's like it just means we're going to start doing yoga that
Okay.
Monday morning.
Great.
Yeah. Jesse, it was so fun to see you.
Thank
It's
you,
been so
Sarah.
long.
I know this has been absolutely delightful. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you, everybody, for listening. I appreciate you listening, and I will catch you on the next episode. Hey everyone, I'm Jesse Nealand, and I want to take a moment to thank you for listening to this episode of the This Is Not About Your Body podcast. I put out new episodes every Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss it. And if you really enjoyed it, please go ahead and leave me a review. Also, if you're looking for more information about body neutrality or you want to work with me, you can find me at my website, jessenealand.com. Or you can just purchase my book, Body Neutral, A Revolutionary Guide to Overcoming Body Image Issues, wherever you buy books, ebooks, or audiobooks. We can also connect on Instagram or TikTok. My handle is Jessi Nealand. And because I make this podcast available for free and without any sponsors or ads, you can also feel free to show your support using the Patreon link in the show notes. And know that your support, if you decide to participate, is always very much appreciated. Lastly, thank you to my brother Jason Nealand for creating the music that plays at the beginning of the show. And thank you for listening, learning, and moving toward personal and collective body liberation.